Extremely happy to have Broken Bells as our guests on the World Cafe today. The duo of producer Brian Burton, Danger Mouse, and singer James Mercer met in 2004, put out their first album in 2011, and released their second album, After the Disco, last year. Mercer is known as the leader of the Shins, and Danger Mouse is an in-demand producer who most recently worked on the forthcoming Black Keys album, Turn Blue, and on the yet-to-be-released U2 album. In the past, he and CeeLo Green released two Gnarls Barkley albums. We have some stellar live recordings from the band's current tour. I began by asking if when they end up in the studio, if it's ever a challenge to make those songs work live.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a challenge. We never think about that, though. We're making it, we don't.
Yeah, you just sort of worry about the task at hand of trying to do your best to make a good song and record it well and all that. But I think it's at the same time, I think now we're sort of getting our feet under us, you know, and it's almost one of those things where it'd be kind of cool to record the record now.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I've always heard about that with bands and never understood it. I'm understanding it a little bit more now.
There are some people who go out and tour songs and then go back in.
Back in the day, you could
do
that.
That's how you did it, yeah.
Now everything's kind of captured. So it's kind of difficult. It's scary to go up there and not have everything all sorted out and just sort of start experimenting and have people recording it with pretty good fidelity.
You know, there's so many things to contrast with what you guys do separately. James, for instance, as for years as the Shins, you're the guy responsible. You've got to come up with the tunes. You've got to write everything. You've got to, you know, particularly on this last record, which was mostly you. Does this take a load off you in a way, the fact that you can collaborate on everything?
Yeah, it does, actually. You know, I mean, you know, showing up and working with Brian is kind of, it's something I really look forward to. I mean, I think, you know, there's always an enjoyable aspect of writing songs and everything. I think just being at the center of everything is kind of sometimes gets a little tiring, you know, but yeah, coming down and working with Brian is really fun because it's like, you know, you basically just have a sandbox full of really cool toys and we just start figuring out cool songs pretty quickly usually, you know.
And there's a kind of a question along those lines for you, Brian, too. When you are, you know, signed on as producer of whoever it may be, Black Keys, U2, whatever, do you get anxious? Do you feel like, oh, my God, I am responsible for this? Because this seems like a kind of a fun collaboration as opposed to I am the producer.
Not so much. I mean, I guess maybe there were a few times early on, years and years ago, I guess, in the beginning of a process where, because it's just like I do with James, where we go in, I have nothing. So as a producer with the band, and I go in, and they look to me sometimes, and I'm like, I have no idea how this is going to go. I don't know what we're going to do, but you just kind of figure it out. But that goes away pretty quick usually, and nowadays I've done it a bunch, so I don't really get nervous in that way because, look, I mean, it still winds up coming down to that, to the band. You know, either you got the material or you don't, and I usually can help a little bit, but it's usually the band doing the heavy lifting in those situations.
So can't put it on you. The first thing we heard from this was Holding On for Life, and there's been a lot of talk about your range on this, James, your falsetto. Brian, how did you encourage him to go up into that range, or did you, or was it just natural for the song?
I mean, I think he started doing it on the first album we did. It's just something we try all the time. We'll be coming up with a song and trying different parts. Like, well, have you tried singing it falsetto yet? You know, and sometimes it'll make it a better part, or sometimes we won't keep it at all. So, for that song, that melody line wound up being sung falsetto. And when you stack falsettos together, they sound like the Bee Gees, pretty much, no matter who you are. If you just keep piling the same line on top of itself and it's a bunch of falsettos, it sounds like the Bee Gees. So that's what we found out when we did that. And he came back in from the vocal booth, and the chorus now sounded like that.
So there was no surprise when that was the first question out of everybody's mouth.
Well,
I thought it sounded, you know, we both recognized the Bee Gees sound.
Sure.
Right.
But we didn't, I mean, that song did not start out, or didn't, I mean, it doesn't, to me, sound much like the Bee Gees in any other way except for that.
Exactly.
But then
you know,
we never thought about the idea that we have an album called that. it's called After the Disco, but the fact that there's disco in the title and people, the Bee Gees, they link those together. And so it didn't really have anything to do with it. There was not a disco record by any means, but that chorus and then the title of the album, if you just listen to the last word of the title, then it gets a little confusing.
Totally. There is, I feel a vibe of 70s production in here. Is that just music you guys love?
I mean, 70s for us was, I mean, for this record, the stuff I was listening to, I guess, would have been stuff more things like Kraftwerk and things that had arpeggiated synthesizers and stuff like that, which is not disco-y really so much. But, I mean, disco music was just, to me, was just the pop music of people going to clubs, and there were very distinct disco groups, and I don't think that was very much of an influence.
I actually wasn't so much talking about disco, but just...
You mean the 70s in general?
Yeah.
Yeah, more 80s, I think, but late 70s and more early 80s for sure. Things like The Smiths, The Cure, Depeche Mode, stuff like that. We grew up around that time, and there was this melancholy kind of sad music that was still sometimes faster and danceable here and there that, you know, a lot of those one-hit wonder groups from the 80s that had from England or something Scotland or Wales or whatever would have a hit, and it would be this really sad romantic kind of song
that you could dance to.
A big dance song. And that was kind of what influenced this record in a lot of ways, because I don't think that we had ever made a record ourselves where those influences had come out, and it started to happen then, and we just kind of went with it.
Well, this is a live version of Holding On for Life. We'll be right back. That is Holding On for Life, a live version of that. And no, that is not all James Mercer on those vocals. Although I suppose it could have been somehow.
Yes. Yeah. Dan Elkin and John Sortland singing with me.
Great players that we have with us and great on the backing singing as well.
James, do you your role is really much more of a singer in this band than it is in your other band. You must really enjoy that.
Yeah, I am enjoying it. It's kind of strange, though. There's sort of an awkward beginning to that process of letting go of the guitar and mm-hmm. just sort of concentrating on singing. I think it is what I do so often when I'm working with Brian and we're in the studio. You know, I'm standing, you know, somewhere in a room or with a mic in my hand maybe, and just kind of riffing out melodic ideas using my voice. And so I kind of know what it feels like to do that for a bit, but it was kind of strange to do that on stage for the first time.
Well, we've gotten over the thought that Broken Bells was a one-off and there was, you know, it wasn't a band and it wasn't going to continue, because this record, I wouldn't even say arguably, you guys have surpassed the first record, which doesn't always happen in these situations, but After the Disco just really sounds great. And you talk about this melancholy, Brian, you mentioned that, and there's a melancholy in most all of what you do, and certainly in a lot of James, what you sing as well. Mm-hmm. But this is, as you say, there's much more tempo on this, with somebody in the studio saying, one of you going, come on, let's.
Yeah, we talked about it, but I know James was pushing for it, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to, I guess.
Not against me, he was probably more vocal about it. I agreed, I thought it would be cool to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be really cool to have, you know, hear our music played in a dance club. It's a pretty powerful setting to experience music, and I don't know, I think that'd just be kind of cool, because it's something I don't do in shins or anything.
So the Danger Mouse remix of Broken Bells, is it coming? Could be.
I've remixed a couple of things off this album already, which I don't usually. I didn't do the last time, but they're not major reworkings, I don't think so.
Right. Well, let's get back to another live performance of tunes from After the Disco. This is The Angel and the Fool. And any memories of how this came together?
Yeah, this one was, I had bought it. This is one where I'd bought in an idea of a song that we then, just musically, that we completely changed. We only wound up keeping just the chords of it.
And Brian had a bass line that he had performed and recorded.
And it had strings and everything else, but we wound up just, and drums, and we just want to pull everything out of it. And then, so we just lined up the song with just the chords and the change. It was only one real big chord change section. And then James just sang along to the just whatever came to his head for 10 minutes. And I remember it was an amazing recording, all the stuff. And we just went in and chopped up the parts that could be put together in any kind of way. But it was, I have to go back and listen to that 10 minutes. There's at least two or three other songs in there somehow.
Wow.
But that's how it started.
Well, this is The Angel and the Fool.
In the weight of tears.
That is The Angel and the Fool, a live version of that song you'll find on After the Disco, the new Broken Bells album. And James Mercer and Brian Burton are out on tour. And how do you, I mean, I guess, Brian, at this point, you have a little bit more pressure on your schedule, unless, James, you're going to go back in and do a new Shins record soon. Is it tough to carve out time, A, for the recording? Because I was reading in 2012 that you had already started working on this. And B, for touring?
Once I know that I can get James in the studio, I pretty much try to clear everything from there on. So, yeah, the end of 2012, we started on it. And then once 2013 came, it was all Bells for the most part for me until we didn't have anything to do. It becomes a priority pretty quick. And then after that, you know, if I have some downtime, I can go work on other things. But that's just if we're not doing anything.
Right.
And once the tour starts, this is just what I'm doing. So I have nothing going on right now except for this.
Either or both of you consider this your main band now?
I mean, for me it is. I haven't done Gnarls Barkley stuff since 2008, so that's by default, you know. And also, you know, it's great. It's really fun to do it. So, and it means a lot. So it definitely is for me. But that's where it would be different, right?
I don't really prioritize either of the two so much. I mean, I kind of, you know, like right now I'm in Broken Bells and I'm just full court press doing this and. You know, so it's kind of like I get to do one thing and then the other maybe, but I don't have to really. It's not like a schizophrenic thing. It's just sort of different periods of time in my life.
Well, it sounds like the tour is going really well. I wanted to play one more. So let's hear the title track, done live. This is After the Disco.
Did
After the Disco is the title track of Broken Bell's second album. James Mercer, Danger Mouse, thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks for the record, too. It's a good one.
Cool. Thanks, man. Glad you like it.
We'll be back in a moment here on The World Cafe.